My name's Tom. I'm here as part of the Smash Edo on the Verge tour. That's basically a tour of the new film about the Smash Edo campaign, trying to talk about the success of the campaign and gather support for actions in solidarity with our campaign and for the Carnival Against the Arms Trade we're going to be holding on June the 4th in Brighton.
Okay, so what is Edo? What's the campaign about?
Edo is wholly owned subsidiary of a US arms corporation operating in Brighton, and there's been a campaign against them for 4 years now. The reason people campaign against them is that they make components for the Paveway system of munitions, which according to Human Rights Watch is the most used guided munition in the aerial bombardment of Iraq. They also make components which are used by the Israeli army in targeted assassinations of Palestinians. They make components which are used in conjunction with the Israeli F-16 and F-15 and used by the Israelis to fire Hellfire missiles into civilian areas. For instance, a month or so ago, a group of Palestinians came to one of our demos from a town called Tubas, and they told us that a few years ago, during the uprising, the Palestinian Intifada, Israeli aircraft firing Hellfire missiles fired missiles into cars in the centre of their town. One of the people killed was somebody who the Israelis were after for one reason or another. But the majority of people killed were children on their way to school. They're directly involved in aiding and abetting war crimes, crimes against humanity in places like Palestine and Iraq. We think that one of the best things we can do in solidarity with people in Iraq and Palestine is to campaign against them. That's why we've started this local movement. Like I say, it's been going for 4 years, people have been demonstrating every week outside the factory, holding acts of civil disobedience, blockades of the factory. Protest camps are held every year outside. We've cost Edo in excess of £1 million, probably quite a lot in excess of £1 million. They're really not doing very well. Nine of their directors have resigned as a result of the ongoing, persistent direct action campaign against them. It's a campaign that's on the verge of a major victory, and that's what we're trying to say to people on this tour. We need solidarity from groups around the country to finally shut the company down. Throughout the course of the campaign, we've experienced really high levels of police repression. For instance, back in 2005, Edo, with the collusion and the support of Sussex Police, applied for a civil injunction under the Protection from Harassment Act, trying to create an exclusion zone around the factory, trying to stop people going to protest. We fought off that injunction in the High Court, and after a year in the court, we managed to have the injunction dismantled and cost the factory over £1 million in court costs. There have been over 60 arrests in the court, well, over 100 arrests and over 60 prosecutions in the course of the campaign. For charges under the Public Order Act, under different pieces of legislation. The police are desperate to clamp down on the campaign. Again, we've fought off those attempts to clamp down on the campaign. Most of those prosecutions have failed due to evidence of the unhealthy relationship between Sussex Police and the factory coming out in the course of those court cases. So most people have been had their cases dropped or been acquitted of those offences. It's been a really successful campaign. We've fought off all these attempts to repress us, and we are going to win. It's a campaign that's not just about symbolic protest. It's not just about bearing witness, anything like that. It's about economically damaging the factory and about shutting them down, and that's what we're trying to say on this tour at the moment.
But aren't you, by stopping the normal activity at this factory, aren't you undermining British national security?
Well, we say that Britain's war in Iraq is a war waged against the civilians of Iraq. It's claimed the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. The occupation and bombardment of Iraq, combined with the chaos it's it's unleashed in the country, has claimed over 1 million people's lives since 2003. We say that's not in anybody's interest apart from the state and corporations who are benefiting from the occupation, the plunder that's going on in Iraq. You might talk about British industry, etc. Might be worth pointing out that the arms trade is a heavily subsidised industry. It wouldn't exist without without the sponsorship of the state. These aren't real jobs. They're jobs that have been created by the state to prop up their illegal wars. So we don't want that kind of business in our town, and we'd like people to support us in shutting it down.
So what is the superstructure of this company? You say it's owned by an American firm.
Edo Corporation is an American corporation which has two units in the UK, in Brighton and Fishers Gate. It doesn't have shareholders in the
UK. Sorry, where is Fishers Gate?
Fishers Gate is just it's on the way to Worthing, basically, close to Brighton. It doesn't have shareholders in the UK, but it's being bought out by ITT Corporation. It was bought out in December by a company called ITT Corporation, one of the biggest arms companies, well, one of the biggest companies, actually, in the world. ITT Corporation were one of the largest suppliers of weaponry to the Nazis during World War II and supported fascist regimes throughout the 20th century. We don't want them coming to our town. One of the things we're saying to people is that we'd like them to campaign against ITT, saying that if they take over the business in Brighton, then they will have a campaign on their hands against all of their premises in the UK. And that's one of the things we're promoting on the tour.
So the tour is showing a film called On the Verge. Can you just give us a quick review of the film?
Well, basically the film talks about the history of the campaign, the history of the police repression, we just want people to go and see it and hear about how successful the campaign's been. The police have been desperately trying to stop the film from being shown. On Monday the 17th of March, when the premiere was due to be shown at the Duke of York Cinema in Brighton, a couple of hours before the screening, Brighton and Hove Council contacted the Duke of York Cinema saying that the film wasn't certificated and therefore shouldn't be shown in the cinema. Lots and lots of films get shown without certification. We've done screenings without certification before. The Duke of York said, you know, the council's involvement was unprecedented in their memory. At this point, Sussex Police denied any involvement in intervening in the screening of the film. Chief Inspector Lawrence Taylor from Sussex Police said that the police would never involve themselves in certification issues and that it wasn't their job to do that and that they hadn't got involved in any way, shape or form. The next day, Brighton and Hove Council, after pressure was put on them, issued a press statement saying that, in fact, the police were the ones who'd instigated the Duke of York's pulling the film.
So were you able to show the film after the threats from the council?
Yeah, we were able to show the film just down the road at a local pub. Over 200 people managed to see the film that night over two sittings. Sussex Police have now admitted that they were involved in the intervention to stop the showing of the film. We thought that was just a flash in the pan, really, an action by a local police officer to, you know, petty action to try and stop the showing. But what in fact seems to be is national coordination by several police forces to visit every venue that we're showing the film in and try to use harassment and intimidation to stop venues from showing the film.
Well, how can the police actually stop a showing? I'm surely that in itself is illegal. The police have no powers, I would have thought, other than, you know, if something is not overly violent or pornographic, to actually stop a film being shown.
Well, Sussex Police have admitted, very helpfully, that they have no role in getting involved in certification matters. Also, we're not charging for the screenings of this film, so there's no reason why the film should have a certificate. We called up the British Board of Film Classification and said, do we need a certificate to show a film for free? They said they didn't know. It's a very grey area, but There's nothing to suggest that we do need a certificate for a film being shown on free screenings. Basically, the police have used different reasons for trying to ban the screening of the films at different venues. Sometimes they've looked at the licensing of the venue and tried to say that the venue's entertainment's license doesn't cover the screening of films. Sometimes they've gone to the venue itself and tried to paint a picture of the people coming to show the film as undesirable. In Southampton, the police went directly to the venue and said that Smash Edo were left-wing anarchists and would cause trouble at the venue, as well as saying that the film was uncertificated. So the police have tried lots and lots of different tactics to stop the showing of this film. We say that that's not what the police should be doing. Chief Inspector Lawrence Taylor agrees with us. It's very interesting that they've gone to all this trouble coordinating between Thames Valley Police, West Midlands Police, police in several counties to stop the screening of this film. And we say that's because it shows them in a bad light and because it shows the unhealthy relationship between a private corporation in Brighton and Sussex Police. That's why they don't want you to see it, and that's why we think that everybody should go and see it.
What about in Bath? What happened in Bath at the screening there?
In Bath, the police visited the local pub complained about the lack of certification of the film. The local pub was forced to pull the film because it was a commercial premises. The people who were organising the screening in Bath very quickly organised another venue at the Friends Meeting House.
Did they actually threaten to... The pub licence might be in jeopardy if they showed the film? How did the police actually manage to persuade the publican?
I think you're actually thinking of the screening in Hereford yesterday. In Hereford, the local police went to the screening, said that the people coming were undesirables and that the pub should think about whether to continue the screening of the film. The pub decided to continue with the screening, the council then said that the film was uncertificated and that for that reason they shouldn't show the film. The pub again said that they would show the film anyway. And in the end, about half an hour before, well, an hour or so before the screening was due to take place.
This is last night?
Last night. The local council sent somebody over to deliver a letter to the pub saying that their licence didn't cover... screenings of this type, and that they would risk a £20,000 fine or 6 months in prison if they showed the film. So local activists very quickly organised a screening in a local cafe. Nobody was unable to see the film. And in fact, this whole attempt at police repression of the film hasn't stopped anybody from seeing the film. It hasn't meant the cancellations of any screenings apart from one screening in Chichester. It's just shown the police up to be the political bias force that they are and made everybody want to see the film that the police don't want them to see.
So what happened in Chichester? It sounds a pity that you've had to actually really cancel one of your venues on your tour.
In Chichester, the venue was... we believe the venue was contacted by the police. It was a commercial venue, and they caved in very quickly. It was one of the first dates on the tour. Most other venues have been very, very supportive of the screenings of this film. If they've had to cancel in the first venue, they've found there's a second venue to show the film in.
So why do you think that the police are doing this? Because clearly you have your own tactics for finding somewhere else if necessary.
I think it's a very bad move by the police, really. It's a very, the attempt to ban the film has made it far, far more popular. I mean, I think the reason why they're doing it is because it shows them in a bad light. It shows their unhealthy relationship with a private corporation. And importantly, it shows that it talks about an incident where the police did not want to disclose documents in a court case. They claimed that documents in a court case attracted public interest immunity and shouldn't be disclosed to the defence. Those documents are very likely to relate to meetings, communication between the Chief Inspector of Sussex Police, Kerry Cox, and Edo's lawyers and the Edo factory. Because of the non-disclosure of those documents, they were told by a judge that if they didn't disclose them, they had to drop the prosecutions of three activists, which they did. And then very quickly, in quick succession, they dropped 21 criminal prosecutions against activists who'd been arrested at the factory. And, you know, we think that there's something they really, really don't want the public to hear there. They're desperate to prosecute activists who demonstrate outside the factory, but they're willing to drop 21 prosecutions in order not to have to disclose these documents.
So will you make a stab at what those documents are, a guess?
I would say that they're documents which disclose meetings, unhealthy collusion between people high up in Sussex Police and the Edo factory.
Okay. Now, can you tell us whereabouts you are on the internet and whereabouts we can find the Smash Edo website, etc., and also how to get hold of the film?
So you can find us on www.smashedo.org.uk, and there's information there about our upcoming demos, the Carnival Against the Arms Trade on the 4th of June in Brighton, and about how to get involved in the Smash Edo campaign. We don't just want people in Brighton to get involved. We want to build a national network of people who can give solidarity to the campaign. We think we can win, but we need people's help from around the country to do that. If people want DVDs, etc., or if they want people to come and do screenings at their local venue, they can email on-the-verge@hotmail.co.uk and visit the On The Verge website hosted by Schmovies. They can also look at Indie Media UK for updates on venues on the tour.
Just briefly then, and finally, this carnival that's happening in June, what's that going to be?
Well, we want everybody, all these groups who we're meeting on the tour to have input into what's going to happen in the carnival. Basically, we want to have a large community event in Brighton. We want to get people to organise coaches from Bristol, Oxford, all these places that we visited on the tour, and participate in a huge Carnival Against the Arms Trade. It's a work in progress, but we're asking people to organise coaches, come down, wear red to the carnival, and we're going to meet in the centre of Brighton and go to the arms factory to have a big party.
Please tell us about the Order and how you came to discover it exists.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here. The Order is truly a secret society. It was founded in the United States at Yale University in 1833. It has continued and exists down to the present day. Each year, the Order takes in 15 men, senior students from Yale University. Never more than 15, only once has it been less than 15. In 1946, they took in, I think, 10 rather than 15 members. So what we have is a secret society which, over the last 150 years, has accumulated about 2,500 members, of whom perhaps 500 are alive today. Of this 500, perhaps 100 are actively in pursuit of the objectives of the Order. It's not another college fraternal society. Yale University is the only university in the United States, or indeed the world, which has senior societies. These are societies where the 15 are selected in the junior year and actually are initiated at the beginning of the senior year. They stay on campus only 1 year as members. They are called knights. When they graduate, they leave the university, they go out into the world, then they're known as patriarchs. So at any one time, you only have 15 knights in existence, and for the rest of their lives, they're known as patriarchs. And they work during their lifetime, or a number do, towards the ends of the order. They are pretty much guaranteed success. Certainly they're guaranteed financial success. And in my reading of the material I have, I infer that so long as they go along with the purposes of the order, so long as they gear their careers and their lives towards certain ends, then they are guaranteed success. How did I come to this knowledge? Well, up to 6 months ago, I denied that there was a conspiracy, because frankly I couldn't prove one. I suspected a conspiracy, but I couldn't prove there was one until 6 months ago. Well, a little before 6 months ago, I received the catalog, which is the membership list of the society, all the way back to 1833, and I received some of their internal documents, enough for me to put together the way they correspond with each other, the operations within the order, to some extent their problems, and to some extent their objectives.
Now, this is the book, An Introduction to the Order, by Anthony C. Sutton. It has a skull and bones on the front and 322.
The 322 is an identification. The order has a temple on the Yale campus. A temple, yes. It's a building, maybe this 50, 60 feet by 40 feet, maybe 40 feet high. There's no windows, two big steel doors. We know what the temple looks like because back in 1880s, a number of Yale students became a little unhappy about what was going on inside this temple. When they went by it at midnight, sometimes they heard strange noises and all kinds of rumors on the Yale campus as to what this might be. There was a break-in. I call it the Yale Gate. there was a break-in to the temple, and the students who broke in cataloged what they found, and they made a drawing, a design of the interior of the temple. And three of the rooms are numbered. One is 322, one is 323, and one is 324. 322 is also, I suspect, the chapter number. And also in correspondence between members, they conclude their correspondence where you and I would conclude yours truly or yours sincerely. They conclude yours in 322. Why 322? There are several theories for this. One is that the order originated with Demosthenes the Greek in 322 BC. That's one theory. Another one is that it stems from the founding date in the United States, which was 1832. So really we have the last two numbers, 32, the second chapter of founded in 1832. The skull and crossbones are prominent in their ceremonies, initiation ceremonies.
This is a symbol of death. Now, why would they take a symbol of death?
Yes. From what I understand, when a new member is initiated, that would be in the senior year at Yale, he's placed within a coffin.
Oh, my.
And now, we only know this from the Yale Gate papers. At least I call it Yale Gate. And from the photographs we have of members inside the temple, many of these photographs are the 15 sitting around a table, and they have this skull and the crossbones sitting on the table in front of them. It is the symbol of death, and it has been called the Brotherhood of Death, and I think it probably more adequately should be called the Brotherhood of Death. So what I've had to do is look at the history, the biographies of the leading members of the order, and reconstruct their career and see if there's a common pattern in their careers. While doing that, I came across some interesting documents. Some members apparently are not too happy once they become involved with us after 10 or 20 years. One member in particular left a memorandum. He wrote it in 1932. He was buried away in his papers. I don't think anybody found it before I did. And it was a six-page memorandum on the order, naming some of the members, and said it was the most sordid thing ever happened in the history of man. So, but to come back to my point, I have to reconstruct the objectives. What are the objectives? In the words of one member, might is right. If you have the power, you use it to achieve your objectives. What is the objective? As you look at the histories of individual members, it can only be one thing: to acquire power, to keep power, to use power for their own purposes.